Hello, my name is John Smetanka, and the name of our program is With Respect. Today's guest on With Respect is Phil McDonald. Many of our listeners know him, have known him for years, as the voice of WSJM Sports. All over the area, all different kinds of sports. And we're going to be talking about how he got into broadcasting local sports, which he's made a career. It's a fascinating story, I'm sure, and I'm sure you're all going to find it interesting that the voice that you all know actually talk about himself. So, Phil McDonald, voice of WSJM Sports, With Respect. We'll be right back. So, Phil, how are you today?
Great. How are you doing, John?
I'm fantastic. All right. First question everybody gets. Where are you from originally?
Well, I was born just outside of Chicago in Skokie. You're very familiar.
I am familiar with that.
Moved to the Benton Harbor area when I was 4 years old. My dad worked in insurance in the Chicagoland area, then took a job with Whirlpool. And so I've pretty much called Benton Harbor St. Joe home my entire life. And I grew up here. I'm here since four years old.
I think I have the audacity to ask you, how old are you?
52.
Whoa, you don't look it at all, let me tell you.
Thank you.
Fred Upton drive me crazy because you both look like you're teenagers, and I'm looking like I'm a refugee from the sarcophagus of King Tut.
But anyway. Hey, I couldn't swim like you do, like you were telling me before we got started here.
Well, that's because I've been doing it ever since my life. It's the only thing I can do anymore because my body keeps saying, we don't want to run anymore. Your knees are gone. No, that shoulder thing is going to stop the weightlifting. So at any rate, now, Phil, tell me about where'd you go to school? Tell me about your family. You talked about your dad getting a job over here. Tell me about your parents and any siblings.
Yeah, my mom and dad, like I said, we lived in Chicago, in the Chicagoland area for a while. Unfortunately, they've both since passed from cancer. So I'm a big supporter of anything that has to do with cancer research and detection and prevention and everything like that. So it's very, very close and dear to my heart. I've got one sister and two brothers. Sister is a couple years older than me. And my two younger brothers.
Yeah.
And very, very close to my family. I mean, we grew up, I never knew my grandmother on my dad's side. She passed away before I was born. My grandfather on my dad's side passed away when I was very young, maybe 5 years old. But on my mom's side, when we moved here, my grandmother and grandfather, who were Italians from Sicily, owned a farm in Coloma, and we were very close to them. And my uncle, my mom's brother, that side of the family, very close. They lived in and still do in Hager Shore, except, my uncle, unfortunately, has passed away. My two grandparents have as well. But very, very close to that side of the family. And I remember vividly on, a couple times a week going out to the farm in Coloma and having dinner with Grandma and Poppy. And, Christmas Eve is always at my aunts and uncles' house. Easter and Christmas was always at my grandma's house, and family memories is just unbelievable. And I consider myself blessed because I am very close to not just my siblings. I was very close to my mom and dad, but also aunt, uncle, grandfather, grandmother, cousins. Very, very close.
Now, was it a big family? That is, you talked about four in your family. What about cousins? How many cousins did you have?
I've got four on my dad's side, and 4 on my mom's side.
Mm-hmm.
We lost kind of connection with my cousins on my dad's side, but since have reconnected, and we keep in touch. They still have a couple cottages in the Potawatomi area near Hager Shores. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, the family, even though we have family members in, you know, the Detroit area, Chicago area, and different parts of the country, this is still home. Mm-hmm. Which is very, very cool.
Now, do you have family get-togethers and where there's just everybody running around and just lots of people?
We do. Whether it be, you know, the major holidays, Thanksgiving, Christmas, not so much Easter. Easter, I think everyone uses that to spend with their own families. But Memorial Day, Labor Day, we find excuses to get together during the summer. And we kind of almost relive what we experienced when we were growing up on the farm in Coloma with my grandma and grandpa.
You know, it's interesting because I have some distant cousins who lived in New Buffalo. And, I was back and forth between Chicago and New Buffalo. We didn't see them very much. He was Dr. Val and his wife, Betty. They had adopted, I can't even remember, I think it was something in the neighborhood of 9 children, had countless foster children, mm-hmm. Temporary children wow. in the house, and then a billion friends. He was a doctor, so he would, if we had a family, they had a family gathering, there might be 100 people.
Wow.
And there were certain things that you did and certain traditions. One of them was huge amounts of food.
Mm-hmm.
People, Val would bring in, literally, people from retirement homes. He would bring in patients. He would bring in people off the street, and they would sit around, and there was 6 languages being spoken. And in fact, I remember I brought a date one night to, I think it was an Easter or Christmas get-together, and you had to be there to see 60 kids and adults running around and 20 people at the main table and noise and everybody's talking in different languages, and but very warm,
mm-hmm.
very everybody. One of them was one of the people who's a regular guest was a minister who was pro-apartheid and from Africa. And sitting next to him were always Haitian doctors, African, French-speaking, but African French doctors and nurses. And it was just everybody's equal and everybody
yes.
talks. And this one night, my date came back and called her mother. And the first words out of her mouth as I was walking out of the room, because I didn't want to intrude, was, "Mama, you aren't going to believe what I was through tonight." But this idea of family, I wonder if it still survives. It certainly doesn't survive as much as it did when we weren't as rich as we are, so that everybody could move out and buy their own houses, move around the country. And they had to live together, the Depression mm-hmm. and that sort of thing. But I wonder if it still is strong in families around the area.
That's a good question. You know, some people I notice so, but others seem to be truly amazed when I talk about the closeness of our family and how many people get together for a simple holiday like Labor Day or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, is that typical for you guys? It's like, well, yeah, and you just assume it's typical for all families.
It's not.
And it's not, no.
Yeah.
I mean, some people are close like that. Some people aren't. You know, it's funny you bring up the traditions for the holidays, and I talk about this here at work, and people will ask me the day after, but with some of the traditions, my mom's side of the family is Italian, and so you have the Italian traditions for some of the holidays. So for like Thanksgiving, lasagna is the main course. And the turkey and the ham are the side course. And for Christmas Eve, that's the bigger, Christmas Eve is our bigger gathering than Christmas Day. The mainstays are veal parmesan and Italian sausage, and
yeah.
everything else is a side course. And so, I'm in charge of making the lasagna now for Thanksgiving. And so I'm at the supermarket buying all the supplies, and they go, "Based on this, lasagna?" I go, "Yeah, and they go, for Thanksgiving? And I look at them, it's like, well, yeah, is that strange? Because you're used to it.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. One of the traditions in that particular family I was describing, Val was Lithuanian, second generation. And Betty was Polish extraction. That's just the part I was related to.
Mm-hmm.
And at Easter time, the Lithuanian custom was to have Easter eggs, and they were all everybody got an Easter egg at the end of the dinner. It was all painted and very elaborately painted. And what you would do is you would turn to your next door neighbor, mm-hmm. and you would each hit the egg. This is a hard-boiled egg. Against the other egg.
Okay.
And whichever one broke, and it was always just one that broke. But if you could keep your egg intact at the end of, five or six, rounds, you were the winner and you got $5 or something like that. One year, the girls in Val's family, Betty and the girls in the family, decided to have a little fun with Dad. And so what they did was he had elaborately put together all these eggs, and they'd painted them. And he painted one egg just beautifully, except it was solid copper. But it was painted beautifully. So in the middle of the night before Easter, Betty and the girls went in, took the egg. They found out what they knew what it was,
mm-hmm.
and so they took a raw egg, and they painted it precisely the same. So the next day, Val is just as happy as if he was sane,
mm-hmm.
and they're going around the table, and Val gets to test out his egg, and he confidently whacks the person, and of course, it spills all over him. It was beautiful. It was a great day.
That's great.
But anyway, so family is an important thing to you,
yeah.
and to the rest of your family. But sports was too.
It was.
How did you get into that?
I got into liking sports when we moved here to Michigan. One of my dad's uncles, Uncle Jim, we would still go in and see him, and they lived right down the street from us in the Skokie area. And if it was in the spring or summer when we go to visit them, he's always watching the Cubs game, and so I got to be a Cubs fan through Uncle Jim. My dad graduated from Notre Dame, so I got to be a Notre Dame fan through my dad, and it just kind of grew from there. I became just a sports fan,
mm-hmm.
and I don't know what it was that triggered it, but when I would listen to games on the radio when I was growing up, instead of listening to what was happening with the game, I was actually listening to the announcers and how mm-hmm. they were describing it, and the background noise and me wishing, oh my gosh, this is so exciting. I wish I was there.
Mm.
And from that, I thought that would be a great profession to get into. And I remember when I was in a junior high school, I had a paper route, walk the route in our neighborhood and across the street in Benton Township. And during the spring and summer and early fall, I'm carrying my little transistor radio listening to the Cubs games.
Mm-hmm.
And
Jack Brickhouse?
It was Vince Lloyd and Lou Boudreau.
Oh, right. I remember those
and
guys.
And Jack Brickhouse was on TV at the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I got to be a fan of those listening. And there was almost to a point where I was listening to games more than I was on the radio than I was watching them on TV.
All right. We're going to come back in a minute to talk more about listening to these folks. But right now, we're going to take a break. This is John Smetanka. We're on With Respect, and we're talking to Phil McDonald, the voice of St. Joseph, that is WSJM Sports. We'll be right back. Thank you. We're now back on With Respect with Phil McDonald, the voice, the Vince Lloyd, the Jack Brickhouse, the Harry Carey of sports here in southwestern Michigan. And we're going to be expanding this because this is a world, you're already taking us out of just this local world of Berrien County sports. We're talking about the bigger world of broadcasting and of sports. But I've got some of the same memories as you. And I've heard this from so many people, and even people much younger than me and you, because I'm much older than you, who grew up, whether it was the Tigers or the White Sox, White Sox. And then the Cubs. And or St. Louis or all these various sports. And they grew up listening often with their grandparent. And it was the combination of, even if they didn't understand the game, it was a combination of being with an interesting, a loved figure, grandfather, grandmother, whatever, the game, the excitement of the speakers, and the crowd. And all of that formed a background. One of the great writers, historical writers, is Doris Kearns Goodwin, who is a biographer of presidents and a lot of TV appearances and whatnot. But she writes about growing up, going to the Boston Red Sox games with her father and becoming a fanatic. And to this day, she's a fanatic with the Boston Red Sox baseball games. Now, I turn to you and I say, let's take it apart. Mm-hmm. The experience that I've described, you've already laid this out, all right? You've talked about your grandparents, your family, the transistor radio, the voice, the sounds. What really, how does it all fit together inside of a person like you?
I think it's just the enjoyment that people get out of sports, whether it be watching it in person or watching it on TV, listening to it on the radio. I really believe that people have so many vivid memories of sports, like you said too, vivid memories as far as growing up with maybe your grandfather or your dad or your uncle. And, you know, if you sit and listen to a game, you start to think, I remember doing this when I was 10 years old, sitting in front of the TV with grandpa or uncle or dad and watching the games. And I think sports is one thing that people can carry on generation to generation to generation, whether the fan of the same team or not. Mm-hmm. It just, people always have memories of going to games with their dad or whoever, watching them on TV. They have great memories of, oh, I remember watching this game on TV with my dad, and this is what happened, and this was our reaction. And that's one thing that I think is really, really special about sports. And we even had somebody comment on our program a couple of months ago. It was actually around election time. And they said, isn't it funny how there are certain things that divide people, such as politics and that, but sports always seem to bring people together. Even if you are a fan of opposing teams, you still have a commonality and you can talk. I mean, I'm a Notre Dame fan, but talk about Michigan and Ohio State fans. I mean, you want to talk about two fan bases that do not like each other, but they can get together and reminisce about certain games.
Oh, yeah.
And it just brings people together in such a unique way that I think a lot of stages in life and things in life just don't do that.
In when I was U.S. attorney years ago, I had a fellow in the office who was a rabid Ohio State fan. He from Ohio State. He was, you know, and the state of Ohio. And his wife was also one of my assistants, and she was from Michigan State. She went to Michigan State, but every year, because we obviously had a lot of Michigan students and alumni there, every year when it came to the Michigan-Ohio State game, there would be this elaborate run-up to the game. So Dan would put on the tapes of Bo Beat Woody or whatever it is, and they would be playing out in the hall, and we'd have a big cake, and we'd have all kinds of people coming in and out of the federal building. Judges were coming down, everybody, clerks, and it was we were the focal point. Now, one year, one of the wise guys, the Michigan fans in the office, kidnapped poor old Dan's bobblehead of Bucky Buckeye and took that poor thing and sent it ransom notes for a week demanding that Dan, if he wanted to see Bucky alive, he would have to sing the Michigan fight song at the party. And, of course, he would, I can't do that. I will not do that. I'm a man of principle.
Mm-hmm.
So the last day, we had double windows in the U.S. Attorney's office in that building. And you could open up with a key the inside window. So somebody got a key. And there, when Dan walked in on Friday morning, was Bucky Buckeye hanging inside this window. So he couldn't get to it unless he had a key. And he sent out emails whining about the demise of Bucky Buck. How could a person be that cruel? It's just, it was great. It was wonderful. It bonded our office and our courthouse and the people who came in and out of it together.
It really does.
It does. It does.
One other member, you know, with rivals too. You being a Notre Dame fan, you probably recognize his name in football when John Robinson coached Southern Cal.
Mm-hmm.
And we would always on Saturdays sit around as a family watch the Notre Dame games, and it was Notre Dame Southern Cal. We're watching the game, and my mom makes this comment. John Robinson is on camera at the time, and she goes, "You know, I like him. I know I'd like to see us win, but I wouldn't mind if they win because I like John Robinson." And I was in high school at the time. I looked at her, I go, "What? You can't like him. He's from Southern Cal. But he just seems like a nice man." Oh. I said, "Well, he can be a nice man the other, you know, however many games of the season. But this game, he's the enemy. He can't be a nice man."
That's right. this is true. And there are even your animosities are part of the image that you form inside of you that make this a common experience. You can understand, I can understand, not like, understand Dan LaVille's fanatical, I consider almost monomaniacal, love of Ohio State, but he might disagree with me. But that spirit of competition, of sports, of men, women. We're going to talk about the differences between the various participants in sports in a minute, but all of that comes together. And I think that even it's subconscious. I'm not sure that people even want to think about it or have to think about it. Mm-hmm. It just happens.
It does. And that's what's so special about sports is it brings people together. Like you said, even unconsciously, people get drawn into a conversation. There are people that work here at the radio station that are not sports fans. But if you've got the Michigan-Ohio State game or the Michigan-Michigan State game, or if Notre Dame is playing Michigan, somehow they get into the conversation. They start like, "I thought you weren't into sports." "Well, I'm not, but..."
Yeah.
It draws people in.
And it doesn't take just March Madness to do it.
No, it doesn't.
It's a fascinating thing which goes around. Now let's talk about how did you get into broadcasting yourself?
It started in middle school. I can't remember if it was 7th or 8th grade. We had a class, and the teacher said it was kind of like part of the class was career education. And our assignment was to write a paper on a particular career. And whatever, and I think, you know, before that, and again, I'm just listening to different announcers on TV and on radio and really appreciating what they do. I said, "I'm going to go ahead and do a paper on sports announcing, being a sports announcer." And, I kind of researched a little bit, and then, you know, we didn't have the internet or anything like that, so I'm just doing what I can to learn more about some of these sports announcers and trying to listen to more games, not for the game, but as the sports announcer, and what makes them good, what don't I like about what they do, and what don't I like about what they do. And ever since that paper in 7th or 8th grade, I thought to myself, I want to do this. And it's something that in high school, we never really did it, but my best friend in high school, Rusty Cutter, he and I, for a couple of years, were in charge of videotaping the football games for Coach Terry Rose. And we would kind of in the background do commentary. And we caught wind from one of the players. They said, you know what, you know, Coach Rose has to turn the sound down on the video when we're watching it, you know, during practice, because you guys are cracking everybody up and we're not paying attention to the games. And again, that the enjoyment of doing with my best friend and getting those kind of comments. And then when I finally, and this was at Lake Michigan Catholic, and then when I went on to college at Albion College, it was they had a student-run radio station, and I started working there. Was a disc jockey, and eventually got to do some sports announcing. And I just I continued to fall in love with the profession.
Now, where did you get your first professional experience? Where you were paid for doing all this?
At Albion College, no, it was all again a student-run radio station, so we got class credit for it. So I did some football games. I did some basketball games. I did one hockey game and realized hockey is not a sport for me to broadcast. Yeah. I can watch it, but there's no way I can broadcast it. And then when I was in college at Albion, it was, I want to say the summer between my freshman and sophomore years. There was a part-time opening here at the radio stations in St. Joe Benton Harbor. And the program director there and the assistant program director, Dave Dennis and Brenda Lane, I got to know them. They brought me in as a part-timer, and I've been with the stations ever since. And they knew I wanted to do sports announcing. And at that time, WSJM had stopped doing broadcasting of high school sports. Because when I was in high school, Dave Dennis and Elmer Dauberstein, Elmer D., they were the two gentlemen who covered high school sports, and it was neat at a football game or a basketball game when Elmer D. walked into the gym, and Elmer was the play-by-play or the color announcer. Dave Dennis was the play-by-play guy, but when they walked in, Elmer D.'s here, and people had said, you know, it must be a big game because Elmer D. is here. Oh. And I used to, you know, listen to them when I was in high school, and they knew I wanted to do it, but they had stopped doing it. For a couple years, but then a couple years after I started here full time, 1 year after I started full time, they brought coverage of high school sports back. And at that time, I was doing color commentary and done a couple of other things, and eventually worked into doing the play by play. And I've been doing it for, oh my goodness, Lord knows how many years, 30 some years.
I was going to start. We can start counting and figure this out, but you might as well get it out of
the table. Yeah, get it out of the way.
All right, so. What kind of sports have you broadcast? How have you covered?
I have done, obviously, like I mentioned, football and basketball. I've done a few baseball games. Usually we've done baseball games if there are area high school teams that make it to the state semifinals or championship games. Same thing with softball. So I've done softball. And I've done two soccer matches, which was very unique. And mm-hmm. I've not knowing a whole lot about soccer. But, again, then you read up on soccer, you watch a little bit, and you do the game. And there's another sport that's pretty tough to do. And then the one hockey game in college. So those are the sports. I can't think of any other sport that we've done reports from the Rotary Track Meet here in Southwest Michigan. Never done play-by-play of that, but we've done continuous updates on what happens at that event, too.
Mm-hmm. So when you come to a game, let's just talk about your mechanics. Before we start this, we're going to take a break. We're talking to Phil McDonald, who is the voice of Southwestern Michigan sports, high school sports, many different kinds, and we're going to be talking about how he gets ready for the game. You know, what is his spring training like, and that sort of thing. This is John Smetanka, we're on With Respect, and we will be right back. back on With Respect, talking to Phil McDonald, the voice of WSJM Sports and Southwestern Michigan Sports. We're talking about that high school. As I say, this is John Smetanka. And when we left off, Phil, I started to ask you the question, when I used to go out to pitch baseball or to play basketball, there's always the warm-up period. And actually before that, if we were really sophisticated like they are now, there would be the tapes to watch. Who's going to, handle that quarterback? Who is going to block the shots from the center and so on? So that preparation goes on. The preparation of warm-up goes on, which, as we know, physically is extremely important.
Yes.
So keep people don't get hurt.
Mm-hmm.
And then thirdly, there is the excitement of going on the court, and the fans are there, and the noise, and so you got to work that into how you as a player, how are you going to approach this game? But you as a sportscaster, how do you go about preparing for a particular game?
I try to study as much as I can, whether it be reading articles on teams if they're in the local Herald Palladium or going online to MLive. And, if I've got a game, between two particular teams, for football, we carry a lot of I primarily do a lot of the St. Joe High School football games. So you get to know the individuals and the team all season long. But let's say if they play a Kalamazoo Central or a Portage Central or a Gull Lake, what I try to do then is go back maybe the previous three games from those particular teams and see whatever information I can get online, if I can get some stats from the coaches, and try to from there base, okay, here's their starting quarterback, here's their starting tailback, here are their primary wide receivers, and I can tell they're primarily a passing team, I can tell they're primarily a running team, who's leading the team in tackles, and have they come back and won games, or have they just blown the opposition out? How close have the wins? How close have they been? Do they alternate quarterbacks quite a bit? So just I try to do as much studying as I can. And football is a little bit easier because you have an entire week. With basketball season, there are times where I'm doing four games a week. And so day by day, I'm trying to catch up with another team or another game to get ready for. And also, if I can talk to the coaches or maybe some of the players as well, and not only just learn about them, but in conversation, whether it be leading up to a game or if I get to know them during the off season and talk to them and they start talking about some of the other teammates and I start taking mental notes, that kind of thing. Or, if I find out that they're a three or a four sport athlete and they're a great student in the classroom, and maybe they volunteer time at certain things, I try to bring that background information in. There's one example of you try to get to know players as much as possible, and you probably recognize the name Derek Jeter.
Mm-hmm.
He played at Kalamazoo Central. We don't carry baseball games unless they are in the state tournament, but Kalamazoo Central is out of our listening area. But we would carry a Kalamazoo football or basketball games if they would play Benton Harbor or St. Joe or Lakeshore. And we would do a lot of the Benton Harbor-Kalamazoo Central basketball games. And Derek Jeter played basketball for Kalamazoo Central. He was a phenomenal basketball player. And then when I found out he was drafted by the Yankees, I said, I have to admit this. I didn't know this guy played baseball. I knew him as a basketball player.
Mm-hmm. Now the world only knows him as one of the great baseball players of our time.
Yeah. So there's something that I did not know about him that I wish I had known during the basketball season, so I could talk about his his baseball career at Kalamazoo.
Well, now you described two things really that you do. First of all, you talked earlier about, there's the play-by-play person and there's the color person. The color person adds color, dimension, mm-hmm. humanity to a particular game. By the way, Bill Jones has a pet elephant, and no one knows about his pet elephant. But you're describing now a combination of what you do, that you are doing both color. Do you have a color man that works with you?
For football games, they do. And you've had him on your show, Brett Witkowski, the county treasurer.
Yes.
So he's my color commentator for football games. Basketball, I go solo because of budget cuts and that. We just decided we would go with one person with basketball. If we do get deep into a tournament run, like if somebody is in the state semifinals or championship game, then Brett or somebody will join me with those broadcasts. And it's funny is if you go an entire season broadcasting basketball by yourself and you have somebody else with you, it's nice to have somebody else, but it takes a little time to get used to somebody else jumping in to say something.
Or
in football, you rely on that other person. And then if you're with working with somebody who doesn't have a lot to say and you're used to being with somebody who does, it's like, oh, okay, now I have to start filling time. And if you can get that rapport between two people that work well together, Pat Hughes and Ron Santo with the Cubs broadcasts, again, Lou Boudreau and Vince Lloyd with the Cubs broadcast. When I was growing up, you could tell they had a rapport, and sometimes they would go off on a tangent. Oh, by the way, there is a baseball game still going on. And, for football, oh, by the way, there is we just missed two plays. Let me catch you up.
Well, that reminds me of the old story that, that Ronald Reagan told, and this was true. Not just in his case, but in his day, broadcasters would take the Cubs or the Cardinals or whatever it was, and they would be talking on the radio, narrating a game, telling the story of a game, doing the color, all of this, and the only information they had was the ticker tape.
I've heard that.
They weren't there.
Mm-hmm.
They were getting the ticker tape and reading ball one, strike one, and they would make it up.
Yeah.
Oh, that was a foul. Oh, look at that foul ball. It's still going. And then the challenge would be if the tape broke or if the machine broke or there was a gap in the information and they would just have to wing it. And I remember listening to games which then in retrospect I realized that's what was going on. And it's, but the skillful ones – you couldn't tell. You still got into the spirit of the game. Now, I want to go to a different phase of this. There are differences which makes things interesting, between people. There are differences between groups. There are differences between genders. There are differences between schools and geography.
Mm-hmm.
We already talked about the commonality. How about the differences? What kind of differences have you seen over the course of your career in the various schools and sports we have around here?
I think the perfect example of that would be with basketball. I mean, you can go from different styles of basketball where it's just run and gun, sprint up and down, rebound, sprint, and within 5 seconds you take the shot. I mean, you have very athletic teams like Benton Harbor. I've done games from River Valley when Jerry Schaefer used to coach there. And he did not have the, top-flight athletes such as a Benton Harbor did or some of the other bigger schools. And so instead of run and gun all the time, they would play more of a set offense and run a lot of clock. And so you got those differing styles right there. And I think I get to appreciate that a lot more when you see the different styles of basketball, and even doing girls basketball as opposed to boys basketball. There are some differences there. If you watch a basketball game, and I've always been a fan of if there's a jump ball, you still jump the ball up. I don't like the alternate possession.
Mm-hmm.
But when you do have a jump ball, I notice if there's a ball loose on the floor in girls basketball, they're going to go for it a lot more than what you do in boys basketball.
That's interesting. That's true. I've seen that.
And you would think it would be the other way around.
Exactly. I remember standing by the court at Notre Dame. I go to the Notre Dame women's basketball games. And I remember standing there and next to a friend of mine who had never been to a women's basketball game. And they were, the players were just mixing it up and bouncing each other around and diving for balls.
Yes.
And he said, I never understood how competitive women are.
They are.
And they are.
And they've gotten a lot more physical, too.
Yeah.
And there's, I mean, you watch girls' basketball, women's basketball, the fundamentals are just amazing. And if people say, well, I don't go to girls' basketball games or I don't go to women's basketball games, I ask, why? Give it one shot and just see how talented that they are. And we've seen a lot of very talented girls' basketball players come through Southwest Michigan, women's basketball players through, like you said, you've seen play at Notre Dame. And, you know, people that maybe go to a game for the first time watch girls' basketball. It's like, wow, this was not what I expected. Mm-hmm. It's a lot better game than I thought it would be. And I think girls and women's sports have come an awful long way.
Oh, yeah.
As far as gaining more respect of people.
I got into it because when my father was still alive, and he was in and out of a wheelchair because of his physical health. He could move. He could walk around and drive and whatnot. But moving him in and out of places was always the wheelchair was useful. Well, we got to going to my daughter was a cheerleader, and she cheerleaded for their team, all the teams, boys, girls, basketball, football, and so my dad would come to these, and we got to watch a heavy dose of young women's athletics.
Mm-hmm.
He, who had, you know, bah humbug, you know, this isn't the White Sox, this isn't the Bears, he became a fanatic because he said, this is really interesting.
Yes.
And the plays and the athletics and the desire, and that's always the part that always fascinates me. When I see a player or a group that really wants to do well,
yes,
really loves competition, you can see it in their eyes.
You can, yeah.
And it's exciting. It comes through to you also.
And that shows their confidence in the way they play and the way they handle themselves. And as the game goes on, you could just tell. So, you hear some people say, well, that you could tell they wanted it more than another team did. But if you really sit back and watch it, at times that does come through.
Mm-hmm.
It really does. You know, one other difference that I've noticed, too, and you mentioned the different sizes of schools and that, is one thing that I've noticed that's kind of neat. I love high school sports no matter what level it is, but I'm a fan of the smaller community schools, and maybe part of that is because I came from Lake Michigan Catholic.
Mm-hmm.
But I notice that if you go to some of the larger schools, like I've been to games in Battle Creek and in Kalamazoo and the Muskegon area, and even here in town, you know, with Bett Harbor, St. Joe, Lakeshore, I think the fan base here is very special in Southwest Michigan. But I see more support from the student body at the smaller schools
yes.
than I do at the larger schools.
Mm-hmm. I agree with that. And I also see, because maybe I was sensitive to this because my daughter was a cheerleader, and I got into these two girl sports. I also see that within the student body, they would cheer more and pay more attention to and come out more for the guys.
They would.
Than they would for the girls.
And they do that now, and it's a shame. And I know a handful of years ago when they made the switch in seasons where you took girls' high school mm-hmm. basketball for the fall and put it into the winter, same as the boys, and move volleyball over to the fall. One thing that I've noticed, and it's too bad, is there are times where some of the bigger schools, I think a lot more schools are doing this, on Friday nights they'll play a girls-boys doubleheader. The two varsity teams will play back-to-back, almost like you would have a JV varsity game, only in these instances it's girls varsity, boys varsity, or the other way around, boys varsity then girls varsity. And you'll notice the crowds are much bigger during the boys games.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
You know, if the girls play first and then the boys, the crowd continues to increase as the game goes on. But if the boys play first, once the boys' game is over, and as the girls' game starting, people are starting to leave, and it's a shame.
It is a shame, yeah. I don't understand it. I mean, if I could probably articulate it, but it would sound a sexist, and it's something I don't believe in. But because I think that that sports are equal opportunity benefits mm-hmm. givers, and I think that the more there is an encouragement to both boys and girls, And it continues on. The more we will benefit as a country because yes. we teach competition, we teach teamwork, we teach focus, all these things. We're going to have to take a break right now. We're talking to Phil McDonald, who is the voice of WSJM Sports. And we've been talking about all different kinds of things. We're going to talk about interesting things that have happened to him at games in a minute. But we're going to take a break right now. This is John Smetanka, Ron, with respect, and we will be right back. We're now back on With Respect with Phil McDonald, the voice of Southwestern Michigan's primary sports station, WSJM, and talking about high school sports of all different kinds. So, Phil, you've been around for a while. Mm-hmm. We've established the mathematics here, and we figure you're somewhere about 75, and you've been doing this for 50, 60 years. All right, close. Great. Now, so you've got this encyclopedic knowledge and history in your head. Are there any particular events that have stuck out in your mind over the years as something really special?
I think some of them was, excuse me, there were back-to-back years when the Benton Harbor basketball team made it to, at that time, the boys' basketball state championships were played at the Palace at Auburn Hills. And they had back-to-back tries at state championships, unfortunately played Detroit Pershing and fell. But just those battles there, and then when two legendary coaches, and again, at Benton Harbor and Battle Creek Central, when and again, I wasn't calling games when Earl McKee was coaching at Benton Harbor. I started calling ball games when Paul Wilhite was coaching basketball at Benton Harbor. And when they would play Battle Creek Central, Chuck Turner was the coach at Battle Creek Central. And it's just two – and at that time, Benton Harbor and Battle Creek Central were two of some of the larger Class A schools in the state of Michigan. And not near what the Detroit schools are, but they were in the upper echelon of Class A schools. And when they would play regular season, not even during the regionals or anything, it got statewide attention. And, excuse me, if they would play – I just told the story not too long ago during our program. If they would play here at Farnham Gym, you had better have gotten there during the freshman game, because if you didn't, you weren't going to get a seat. People anticipate. It could have been on a Tuesday night, but they always played those games on Friday. It could have been a Tuesday, and people would get there during the freshman game because they needed a seat to see Benton Harbor play Battle Creek Central. Battle Creek Central's home court was their the field house at the high school, a very old arena, but classic. I love doing games at the field house, and it's just the intimacy, but the intimidation the same way. But sometimes when they would play at Battle Creek, they would actually move it to Kellogg Arena, a very large size arena in Battle Creek, just to hold the crowds. And so I remember those rivalries, and I think the biggest thing is just the rivalries themselves is what sticks out in my mind. When you've got the Benton Harbor and Battle Creek Centrals, the St. Joe and Lakeshores, and then, you know, some of the other rivalries as well, Coloma and Watervliet, or whether it be, you know, River Valley and New Buffalo. It just
Michigan Lutheran, Lake Michigan Catholic.
Yes.
That was a big one.
Yeah, it still is a lot of times. And just when the fans get together, the fans have the mutual respect for each other. And the players do as well. But boy, when you're on the competition court, forget about it.
Screaming, yelling.
Yes.
Oh, God. Oh, I love it.
Yeah. So those are the things that really stand out in my mind. It's just the rivalries and just the buildup. And you go to other parts of the state and the communities, they support their teams, but and maybe I'm biased, but it just seems like you really have it here in Southwest Michigan. Maybe it's because of the smaller communities.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What about people? Any people that stand? You mentioned Derek Jeter, you know, mm-hmm. now just retired as the all-star New York Yankee shortstop, sure to be in the Hall of Fame. Decent guy from Kalamazoo.
Mm-hmm.
What about others? And you recall others?
A lot of the coaches stand out in my mind. Jerry Schaefer, who was a longtime basketball coach at River Valley, I still see him on occasion, and we catch up a little bit, and, you know, his family. Like I mentioned, Paul Wilhite at Benton Harbor, and you know, in, the coaches that I had at Lake Michigan Catholic always stand out in my mind. The funny thing there is, one of my teachers at Lake Michigan Catholic was Mr. Stefanich, mm-hmm. and Wayne Stefanich was at Lake Michigan Catholic even well after I graduated, and he eventually became the boys' varsity basketball coach, and for a short time was the athletic director,
mm-hmm.
and. I would call the school maybe to alert them we wanted to come to do a ball game or just ask a question or something, and the secretary would answer on it. Says, "Is Mr. Stefanich here in?" And she would laugh. She goes, "We call him Wayne." And I said, "Well, I can't. He was my social studies teacher. I have to call him Mr. Stefanich."
Yeah.
And then the people I've had a chance to cover in interview, Wilson Chandler from Benton Harbor, who now plays for the Denver Nuggets, Anthony Miller, who went on to a pro basketball career, Rob Fredrickson from St. Joe, who went on to a pro football career for a short time, and you know, Matt Manti from River Valley, who went on
Marcus Muhammad,
exactly. And he and I are still very close,
mm-hmm.
and love to sit down and talk some basketball.
Now mayor of Benton Harbor.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so to see what they've gone on to become after high school and just think, wow, I got a chance to not only see them play sports, but cover their games. Rachel Sheffer, who was a great student athlete mm-hmm. at Waterville Elite, went on to play women's basketball at Michigan, had a great career at Michigan. So she's another one. Lisa Harvey-Gondrzik from Benton Harbor, now she's the women's basketball coach, and her daughters, Calabria, went on to Michigan State. Kaiser went on to Michigan, and just a chance to see, you know, from mom to daughters. It's a lot of that stuff just, it's more than just the game itself, just like you mentioned, the people you get a chance to meet mm-hmm. and get to know, and you still stay in contact with after they leave school.
Well, you know, that would seem to me to be an advantage that high school has over college, because
yes.
college, they just spread out to the world.
Mm-hmm.
And how often, maybe they come back. I was at a game recently in which they brought back the championship the Final Four team for Notre Dame women back in 1997, I believe it was. And they introduced them all, and they're told about what their lives are like, where they're at, and they're all over the place. But they came back for that one game. I happened to be standing with Bob Nagel, who is the voice of Notre Dame women's basketball. And as each one was introduced, he would whisper to me an anecdote about them.
Oh, yeah.
And I learned so much about what the nugget of you know, this rambunctious kid that wouldn't be disciplined and went on to become mm-hmm. A hero. I had her arm. I did Danielle Green.
I heard that show.
And she is a remarkable human being. Had her arm blown off by an RPG in Iraq. And has taken every single thing that has happened to her and turned it into lemonade.
Yes.
But the same, so it is even more interesting, I think, because it's more present to you, that you can see them when they come back in after high school, because there's mm-hmm. many still live in the community.
They do.
And never leave or come back to the community.
Yeah. Another one stands out is Joyke Bell. His phenomenal career at Benton Harbor went mm-hmm. on to Wayne State, and now has been with the D- Detroit Lions. He's playing professional football. When he comes back, you know, he and I will connect. As a matter of fact, I was doing a Benton Harbor St. Joe basketball game this past winter, and he came up and kind of took my headphones off before I went on the air and put it on him. And I said, "I got an extra set of headphones. You want to do the game?" He goes, "All right." And then I pulled them out, and he thought I was kidding. And he and I broadcast the basketball game together. And there was one time, a handful of years ago, I saw him in town. He was here for the Blossom Time Parade. I go, "Joyke, how you doing?" He goes, "Mr. McDonald." I go, "Mr. McDonald, where'd that come from?" But again, there you go. I call my teachers Mr. and Mrs.
Yeah,
and
don't
he's
complain.
Calling me Mr. Yeah, because you're an NFL, you know, star, and you're calling me Mr. McDonald. I was like, "No, that's my dad's name."
I've heard that one before. So what's it for the future for you? What where you go from here? You've had a lot of experiences, you've talked about them. It shows in your eyes, in your voice, that you love it. What happened? Do you can do this for the rest of your life till 174?
I could do it for the rest of my life, and I could do exactly what I'm doing, the high school sports in Southwest Michigan. A dream of mine has always been to do college football. I've never really pursued it that much. Nothing has ever come my way. But, you know, if I had a chance to call college football, you maybe even still do what I'm doing here with WSJM, but, you know, hook on someplace to do college football, just because I love the atmosphere and everything about college football. And I think that's what also I love about high school sports, and I've been doing it for so long, is just the atmosphere. And still, they play the game for the love of the game as opposed to for the money. And so I'm a bigger – I've told people, if I had a chance to go to an NBA game or a high school basketball game, I'd take high school basketball in a heartbeat. I don't care who's playing.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. I just love it for the innocence of the game, the love of the game, and the atmosphere, and the closeness of the fans with the other players and all that. So I could do this the rest of my career. I've never thought of doing anything else. But one thing that I always say is I feel blessed and extremely lucky because I love what I do. And not everybody can say that.
My mother used to say, if a person's hobby is their job and their job is their hobby, they're blessed.
And that's exactly how I feel.
Yeah. There was a couple of Czech lawyers from the central part of the Czech Republic. And they were staying with me for a month. And we went to Michigan-Indiana football game and over at the Big House.
Okay.
And these two guys, you know, love sports. They even played baseball over there. But they were, you know, soccer fans and soccer players. They got to the Big House for this game. And it was an ordinary Big House game. I mean, this was not Ohio State.
Right.
But it was still filled. They went down. They sat there and they looked and they said, there are more people in this place right now than in three of our cities.
Yeah.
I mean, multiply our city by three. And then they were so fascinated by the cheerleaders, we couldn't get them away from going down and trying to talk to the cheerleaders. All right. Well, at any rate, it is been a joy talking to you. This is a lot
Same
of
here.
Fun.
I've always respected your show and enjoyed listening to it. It was an honor when you asked me if I wanted to be on the show with you. True
Bless
honor.
Your soul. That is. I wish I could can that and show that, send that around to various radio stations. See, I really can do a good show. Any rate, again, one person that stands out above anybody else. Who is it?
There's one that stands out. It's hard to take one. I guess one interview that I had a chance to do was with Sparky Anderson when he was manager of the Detroit Tigers. I'm not a Tigers fan, but I had a chance to one-on-one do an interview with Sparky Anderson. And it just that stands out in my mind, I think, more than anything.
Well, you've talked about coaches. You've talked about fans. You've talked about schools, geography, players. And it's been fascinating. Thank you very much. It's
Thank
been
you.
A real pleasure having you on.
Same here.
The name of our program is With Respect, and we're on every Sunday and Thursday. And remember, our mantra, if you show respect to other people, they will show respect to you.